Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Collective Bargaining Agreements Edition. Today our featured guest is Raymond LaJeunesse, Vice President and Legal Director of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, discussing 14 Penn Plaza LLC v. Payette, heard in oral argument on Monday, December 1st. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers the problem of collective bargaining agreements which waive an employee's right to a judicial forum. The case comes to us from Local 32BJ of the Service Employees International Union. Three members of that union were replaced as night watchmen by new, younger employees in 2003 and reassigned to other duties. The collective bargaining agreement in force specified arbitration as the sole remedy for discrimination claims, explicitly including statutory claims of age discrimination. The union, however, declined to arbitrate the plaintiff's statutory claims, and so plaintiffs filed suit against their employer for age discrimination in the Southern District of New York. The district court denied motions to dismiss or compel arbitration, following a Second Circuit precedent that a union cannot waive its members' right to a judicial forum for statutory claims, and on appeal, the Second Circuit stood by its precedent and affirmed. The Supreme Court now considers whether an arbitration clause in a union-negotiated collective bargaining agreement clearly waiving an employee's right to a judicial forum for statutory discrimination claims is enforceable. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. LaJeunesse.
On December 1, 2008, the United States Supreme Court heard oral argument in a case entitled 14 Penn Plaza LLC versus Payette. That's spelled P-Y-E-T-T. The court's decision in Penn Plaza could settle a long-standing debate over the extent to which an arbitration clause in a collective bargaining agreement between a union and an employer can bind individual bargaining unit employees whom the union represents for purposes of collective bargaining and contract administration. The plaintiffs in Penn Plaza are longtime employees in a commercial office building who are reassigned from their positions as night watchmen to less desirable positions as night porters and light duty cleaners. Younger security officers employed by a subcontractor replaced the plaintiffs as night watchmen. The union representing the plaintiffs declined to arbitrate their claims of wrongful transfer and age discrimination because it had consented to the subcontracting. The three workers then sued their employer in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York, alleging that they had been transferred and replaced in their night watchman positions by younger security officers in violation of the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. The employer moved to dismiss or compel arbitration of the workers' discrimination claims, relying on a provision of its collective bargaining agreement that clearly required arbitration as the sole remedy for any statutory discrimination claims, explicitly including Age Discrimination and Employment Act claims. The District Court and subsequently United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit denied that motion, holding, as the Second Circuit put it, quote, that mandatory arbitration clauses in collective bargaining agreements are unenforceable to the extent they waive the rights of covered workers to a judicial forum for federal statutory causes of action, end quote. In doing so, the District Court and Second Circuit relied on a line of Supreme Court cases that began with Alexander versus Gardner Denver Company in 1974. Gardner Denver was a case brought under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The Supreme Court there held that a collective bargaining agreement cannot waive covered individual workers' rights to a judicial forum for causes of action created by Congress. The employer's motion to compel arbitration relied on a later Supreme Court decision, Gilmer versus Interstate Johnson Lane Corporation, decided in 1991. In Gilmer, the court held that an individual employee who himself had agreed to waive his right to a federal forum could be compelled to arbitrate a federal age discrimination claim. Gilmer distinguished Gardner Denver. However, some legal commentators have questioned the continued viability of Gardner Denver after Gilmer because the Gilmer court repudiated some of the statements in Gardner Denver about the deficiencies of arbitration as compared to a judicial forum. Gilmer did not, however, repudiate the most important reasons from the perspective of individual employees that the court gave for its holding in Gardner Denver. Quoting from Gardner Denver, quote, a union may waive certain statutory rights related to collective activity, such as the right to strike. These rights are conferred on employees collectively to foster the processes of bargaining and properly may be exercised or relinquished by the union as collective bargaining agent to obtain economic benefits for union members. Title VII, on the other hand, stands on plainly different ground. It concerns not majoritarian processes, but an individual's right to equal opportunities. Of necessity, the rights conferred by Title VII can form no part of the collective bargaining process, since waiver of these rights would defeat the paramount congressional purpose behind Title VII, end quote. And even more significantly, Gardner Denver reasoned that, quote, a further concern is the union's exclusive control over the manner and extent to which an individual grievance is presented. In arbitration, as in the collective bargaining process, the interests of the individual employee may be subordinated to the collective interests of all employees in the bargaining unit. Moreover, harmony of interest between the union and the individual employee cannot always be presumed, and a breach of the union's duty of fair representation may prove difficult to establish, end quote. The Supreme Court recognized the tension between Gardner Denver and Gilmer in Wright versus Universal Maritime Service Corporation, decided in 1998. In Wright, the court ruled that the right of employees to a judicial forum for federal employment discrimination claims cannot be waived by a collective bargaining agreement without a, quote, clear and unmistakable waiver, unquote, of that right. However, the court decided it would not reach the question whether such a clear and unmistakable waiver would be enforceable. The court must reach that question in Penn Plaza. The question presented, on which the Supreme Court granted certiorari, is, quote, is an arbitration clause contained in a collective bargaining agreement freely negotiated by a union and an employer, which clearly and unmistakably waives the union members' rights to a judicial forum for the statutory discrimination claims, enforceable, end quote. The case attracted a significant number of amicus briefs. Briefs in support of the employer were filed by the Chamber of Commerce of the United States and the Equal Employment Advisory Council, a nationwide association of employers, quote, organized to promote sound approaches to the elimination of discriminatory employment practices, end quote. Amicus briefs in support of the employees were filed by the United States government, the National Academy of Arbitrators, the National Employment Lawyers Association, joined by the American Association of Retired Persons and American Association for Justice, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, joined by six other civil rights organizations, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win, and the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. The Service Employees International Union Local that represents the employees' bargaining unit also filed a brief that was styled as in support of the employees. However, its brief did not address the question presented, but merely argued that the motion to compel arbitration was correctly denied because the collective bargaining agreement, it argued, does not require covered employees to arbitrate discrimination claims that the union has declined to arbitrate. This may be the first and only time that the AFL-CIO and National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation file amicus briefs on the same side, because the foundation staff attorneys primarily and regularly represent workers in litigation against unions. The foundation's brief emphasizes the inevitable conflict inherent in exclusive representation between the interests of a union and non-members whom it represents against their will. That point was not made by the brief of the plaintiff employees who are union members, nor by any of the other amicus briefs. In reviewing the transcript of the oral argument, Justices Souter, Ginsburg, and Kennedy seemed concerned about the fact that on its face, under the agreement in this case, quote, the employee is subject not merely to the right of the union to choose the arbitral forum, but in fact to assert any claim at all, end quote, as Justice Souter put it. Justices Breyer and Ginsburg also appeared to accept the workers' attorney's argument that, as Justice Ginsburg said, quote, the union could not bargain about these anti-discrimination rights because these are rights given to individuals by Congress, end quote. Surprisingly, Justice Ginsburg, who usually votes with the union's position in cases before the court, asked whether, quote, people who are not members of the union, but they have to pay an equivalent amount for the union's services in collective bargaining, would be bound as well, end quote, the problem raised by the National Right to Work Foundation's amicus brief. On the other hand, several questions asked or comments made by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia and Alito suggest that they might rule for the employer. For example, Justice Alito said, quote, there is nothing in federal labor law that would preclude the negotiation of a collective bargaining agreement that provides that a grievance must be arbitrated, and it will be done either by the union or, if the union declines to pursue it, by the individual employee. Some of the justices also appeared disturbed by the failure of the Workers' Council and the assistant to the Solicitor General, who argued in support of the workers, to provide a clear, principled answer to where the line can be drawn between claims that a collective bargaining agreement can lawfully require workers to arbitrate and claims that cannot be forced into arbitration. A principled answer to that question would have been that arbitration can only be required for claims based on the collective bargaining agreement itself and not for individual workers' claims arising under a statute or the common law. After all, could a collective bargaining agreement waive the right of individual workers to file unfair labor practices against their employer with the National Labor Relations Board? The question answers itself no. Justice Stevens asked too few questions to predict his vote, and as is his practice, Justice Thomas asked none. In sum, the oral argument in the Supreme Court provides no clear indication as to how the court will rule in the case. One labor law professor who is sympathetic to unions has hopefully predicted that the court will rule 6-3 that unions and employers cannot agree to force workers to arbitrate their individual statutory discrimination claims, with only Justices Roberts, Scalia, and Thomas in dissent for the employer's position. This professor also predicted that if he is wrong about that count, the vote will be 5-4 in favor of the employer, quote, with Kennedy or Alito writing an opinion that allows for union-forced waivers, at least in some circumstances, end quote. I hope that the professor's prediction that the workers will win is the accurate one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.